Next case for argument is Downey versus Comdisco. Mr. Trella.
Good morning. May it please the court. This is a contract case. The principal issue is, does Section 11B of the lease agreement between Comdisco and Downey mean what it says? The lower courts held that it doesn't and rejected Downey's claim as a result. That decision should be reversed. Section 11 of the
lease...
Maybe
you could explain what this weird transaction is about.
Well, Your Honor, the transaction came about because Downey had unused net operating losses that were set to expire. Essentially, it needed current income to offset so that it could make use of those. And this transaction was structured, supposedly, to provide Downey with current income that it would have, I think it was before the end of 1990 when these losses expired, as well as a stream of depreciation and hopefully a profit at the end of the lease term when the computers were supposed to have a significant residual value. So that's the, in a nutshell.
So you buy these computers and then you... Then you lease them back to Comdisco, and you get lease income. And are you permitted to deduct that lease income immediately or over the life of the lease?
The way it was structured was that Downey received a lump sum payment of the discounted present value of the future stream of lease income contemporaneous with the closing.
The lease income was paid in a lump rather than periodically.
It's paid in a lump, and it's supposed to be current, recognizable as current income when paid. So that's how you get
right,
the benefit
okay.
of the net operating loss. So
suppose the computers had no residual value. How long? What was the period of the lease?
5 years.
5 years. So suppose these computers have zero value at the end of 5 years. Probably true. So then the present value of the lease income presumably would be equal to the sale price, wouldn't it?
Oh, you mean if you knew that up front?
Yeah. Suppose you knew these computers would be worthless in 5 years. Then wouldn't the present value of the lease income have to be equal to the sale price?
Well, I would think that you wouldn't want to pay more than the discounted present value of the
right.
the lease income.
So that's all you would pay to Comdisco.
Correct.
So, but you anticipated that at the end of 5 years, these computers would have some value.
Right. According to the appraisals right. that Comdisco provided, they'd have almost $9 million.
Right. How many appraisals did you receive?
Well, there were two Marshall and Stevens reports that dealt with two different kinds of computers that were involved. Then there were two, what I guess I would call corroborating reports that Comdisco provided.
But they were lower, though, than they...
No, the two I'm referring to, Your Honor, were two that said, we've reviewed the Marshall and Stevens work, we agree with their analysis, and we agree that their estimates are reasonable, or words to that effect. And then there were some others, some of which were higher, some of which were lower. The others, though, were not appraisal reports prepared specifically for this transaction with this mix of these particular computers. They were industry-type publications, computer economics, and here's our forecast of what this model, we think this model is going to be worth X years from now. So the reports dealing with this transaction that Downey received from Comdisco all show, you know, there were two main reports and two corroborating reports.
How old were the mainframes when they were sold or leased?
They were virtually new. I think they had been in, some of them had been in service for a few months, but these were essentially new computers at the time. So they.
But supposing you expected to have a residual value, then what's in it for Comdisco?
Oh, well, there are a couple of things in it for Comdisco, Your Honor. One thing is you may notice in the purchase agreement, I believe it's on the first page, but there's a finder's fee paid to a firm. In fact, most of that, almost all of that, was paid by that firm to Comdisco. So there was about a $1.5 million fee that Comdisco got. Also, this is in effect a financing device for Comdisco. Comdisco was in the business of leasing computers. That takes a lot of capital. And from Comdisco's perspective, it's a way essentially to get Downey to pay for the computers, the capital cost. Then Comdisco has the computers and it leases them pursuant to subleases to its customers.
Of course, they get the difference. They just get the difference between the present value and the purchase price. They're not getting the full purchase price.
Right. That's right.
So are you suggesting this transaction has a business purpose apart from tax avoidance?
Well, that was certainly Downey's understanding going in, and it turned on the fact that it was supposed to have a substantial residual value, so that at the end of the lease, the gap between the purchase price and the discounted value of the lease payments would have been more than made up by the residual value of these computers, which could have been sold, could have been put out on lease again. There are obviously a variety of ways.
So you're saying, from a business standpoint, Comdisco gets a finder's fee and gets some capital to play with for the 5 years, and you get some chance to profit from the residual value of the computers.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Although what happened here, of course, you got in trouble with the Internal Revenue Service instead.
That's correct, Your Honor. So
I suppose you could have. So you could have complained. You could have complained even if you'd gotten your tax benefits. Is that the logic of your? Could you still complain that they had given you an improper?
Well, if it depends. If we could have had a proper, accurate appraisal that ended up being radically wrong because of changes in the marketplace in the interim and all of that. In that circumstance, I don't think we'd have a complaint. If the appraisal had been properly done, had been accurate as of 1990, the fact that that value didn't materialize 5 years later.
I suppose the appraisal had been carelessly done and was inflated, so that as a result you just didn't. Maybe you got your tax benefits anyway, but you didn't realize the anticipated value of the residual value of the computers. Would that?
I think there if
be
the
a base for a breach of contract suit.
If, as a factual matter, the appraisals that Comdisco provided were inaccurate as of 1990, as I think Your Honor's hypothetical, I think there would be a potential just regular breach of contract type claim. Now, it might or might not be. The recovery might or might not be the full difference between that appraised value and what ultimately materialized. I suppose what you'd have to go back and say, what would a proper appraisal have produced, and that would be your measure.
Now, so if we look at the contract provision, it's about documents or certificates furnished by Comdisco. Furnished. So did they physically provide you with a Marshall and Stevens appraisal or?
Well, actually, the record is somewhat confusing on this. As you may have noticed, the bankruptcy court, although it states in its opinion that among the documents Comdisco provided were these two reports, in a footnote it says the facts really are sort of unclear, and I'm going to assume that Comdisco provided these reports, but I don't need to decide it, and then proceeded on with the analysis. Comdisco doesn't argue as an alternative basis for affirmance that the court should find that they weren't provided.
Who paid for them?
That's another interesting question, Your Honor, and another fact that is somewhat confused in the record. You can find indications that Comdisco paid. You can find indications that Comdisco paid and Downey, through some mechanism, reimbursed Comdisco. The record does not contain any invoices or any canceled checks that would definitively establish who paid. Downey's witness said he doesn't think Downey paid. Comdisco's witness, I think, says he thinks Downey paid. So that's where we are on that issue. Again, it's one of the facts I think the bankruptcy court was referring to when he said that the record was in a state of confusion on that point.
If you wanted these M&S reports included in the documents that were encompassed within the indemnification clause as an event of default, why didn't you list them?
Well, Your Honor, I think we did. The clause says any document furnished in connection with these contracts. That's extremely broad language.
But the documents read together and in their totality contain other listings of documents that are being furnished at closing, which seems to indicate that those are the documents that are being referred to in the indemnification clause and the event of default clause, rather than documents that preceded closing and that were exchanged in connection with the negotiations.
Well, Your Honor, I would disagree. I think that it would have been very, very easy for ComDisco, which is the party that drafted the contracts, to say this Section 11B applies to documents required to be furnished, documents referenced herein, documents provided pursuant to these contracts. In fact, there's another provision in the lease, Section 20B, that talks about, and it deals with the survival of reps and warranties after the date of the transaction, and it specifically says any reps or warranties in documents provided pursuant hereto or in connection with. So ComDisco knew how to use that language, and there's clearly a difference between the two terms. So I would submit that when you say any document furnished in connection with, that's extremely broad language, as this Court's cases have held, both in the arbitration and non-arbitration context. In fact, one of the Court's cases refers, says you can't have a broader phrase than in connection with. So I think that certainly if the contract provision had said the Marshall and Stevens appraisals reports, I wouldn't be standing here. But I think given the breadth of that provision, the plain meaning of it covers these reports.
Now, Marshall and Stevens, they have an express disclaimer of liability. So isn't it odd that ComDisco would be warranting something that warranting Marshall and Stevens' performance when Marshall and Stevens itself is afraid to warrant?
Well, I think if what Marshall and Stevens' disclaimer says is that the values, the particular values, are not guarantees. They don't say, we don't represent that we did this properly, where our report says that we had satisfactorily accurate age life curves that we used. They're not saying that.
So have you sued them?
We have not sued them.
Why haven't you sued them? Aren't they a joint tortfeasor? Not joint tort, but why wouldn't they? Well, no, why wouldn't they be?
I'm not sure that.
Do you have a cause of action?
I'm not sure we would or not, Your Honor, given that. Exactly. In our view, our party was ComDisco. They gave these things to us. ComDisco might have a claim over against Marshall and Stevens if they were found liable to Downey. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time, if I may.
Thank you, Mr. Trella. Mr. McKenna?
Good morning. This was a fairly sophisticated tax advantage transaction negotiated between sophisticated parties pretty carefully. And there were two high points of tax risk, according to the tax cases as they existed at the time of the deal in 1990. One was you couldn't pay more than the fair market value for the goods that were involved in the sale leaseback. The other was you had to have an economic profit motive, which meant at the end of the transaction, 5 years out, you needed to have a reasonable prospect of making a profit. Now, what the parties did in these fairly complicated agreements was they took those two risks and they allocated them. ComDisco took the fair market value risk. That's an express warranty in Section 4G of the purchase agreement. ComDisco warranted that the purchase price of the equipment did not exceed the fair market value. In fact, that's where the purchase price came from. It came from the estimate of existing fair market value. ComDisco did not take the residual value risk. And there's a good reason for that. As we all know, computers change. They change radically, rapidly. And we're talking about not an appraisal.
But ComDisco is the computer company. It knows more about these things than Downey.
And that's exactly why it wouldn't take that risk ever, Your Honor.
I understand you. Usually the party who knows more about the risk would be the one who would be responsible. I don't get the logic of your argument.
Well, and Your Honor, Downey, in their protest to the IRS, which they swore to in 1998...
If you sell a person a drug, it's the drug company that warrants that it's fit for consumption. It's not the, it doesn't shift the risk to the consumer.
Well, I understand that, Your Honor, but Downey knew it had to take that risk, and here's what it told the IRS.
I don't understand you. If you take a drug, right, you have to take the risk the drug will poison you or something like that, but you rely on the warranty of the seller.
Yeah, but this is a transaction between sophisticated commercial parties, and to get the tax result they wanted in the deal, Downey had to take that risk.
I don't understand you. I mean, you may have a perfectly good argument, but this is not a good argument because there had to be some allocation of risk. There's nothing in the nature of the transaction that says that it's Downey that has to take the risk rather than Comdisco, right? Why Downey?
That's in the law. I think the contract needs to be interpreted in light of the law that existed at the time. The Rice's Toyota World case and the Mukherjee case, both involved in sale leaseback transactions before the date of this deal in 90, they said you have to have the risk of loss as the buyer lessor to be able to sustain the tax benefits. And Downey knew it, and they told the IRS.
I just don't understand your argument at all. Do you have some other argument?
Sure, Your Honor. Let's look at the language of 11B. First of all, Your Honor, you can't pick and choose. Counsel referred to Section 20B. I think you read 20B and you read all the different provisions of these agreements together, and you see that what 11B is talking about is the inaccuracy in representations or warranties made by Comdisco, whether in the purchase agreement, sale agreement, or some other document. And these Marshall and Stevens reports that form the basis of their argument, they're simply not representations and warranties. They're the opposite. As the court pointed out, they disclaim any guarantee. And counsel tried to tell you that somehow or other the methodology or the accuracy of the appraisal reports was vouched for. That's not correct, Your Honor. If you look at those reports, which are in the appendix, what they say is our curves have proven to be satisfactorily accurate to permit us to make reasonable estimates of future value. That's not a guarantee of accuracy or a warranty of methodology. That's a backward-looking statement. In the past, our curves have been satisfactory. So I don't think you've got the first component here, which is...
But does that mean there's no... Suppose Marshall and Stevens is completely negligent, and, you know, it moves a decimal point or something and estimates the residual value of these computers as 10 times what anyone would think it worth. So is there no remedy?
Maybe there's liability for Marshall and Stevens.
What do you mean maybe? Is there or isn't there?
Well, I think there would be a very difficult case against Marshall and Stevens under the Illinois precedent regarding tort claims against appraisers. You know, for example, the Dual Nash Realty case. What they say is an estimate or an opinion of value can be actionable if the circumstances indicate you were both definitively giving a value and seeking to have someone rely on it. Here you have Marshall and Stevens saying we're not guaranteeing anything for good reason. For good reason. Everybody knew how unreliable.
Mr. Trellis said they weren't guaranteeing their estimate of value, but why would that shield them if they make a negligent error in computation?
Well, because, Your Honor, the Illinois cases specifically say that generally speaking, an opinion is not actionable in fraud or consumer fraud, and it would depend on what contract you had with them if you had a contract claim, but a specific definitive representation given under circumstances such that it was without reservation can be actionable. I'm saying it would be a difficult claim for them to have made against Marshall and Stevens in the face of the non-guarantee language. And, Your Honor, I think the other thing you have to look at is all the Illinois cases that deal with the liability of appraisers in tort are dealing with immediate fair market values of some object or piece of real estate. Marshall and Stevens, Downey, when they submitted their protest to the IRS, they all acknowledge there's a huge difference in the world of computer equipment appraisal between saying, here's what I think the fair market value is here today, and they even refer to them as forecast, not appraisal, here's what I think 5 years out. I think they'd have a really impossible case against Marshall and Stevens, but they never brought it anyway. They have no case against Comdisco, however, because we specifically were aware of that risk and we excluded it from the contract.
Now, these sale and leasebacks are maybe not in computer, but these sale and leasebacks are extremely common. Why hasn't this issue been resolved?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, sale leasebacks in general are pretty common. But this particular type, which they refer to in the business as a NOL soak-up, where they would have existing losses and they'd soak them up, this particular type, there were only 10 or 12 of these transactions ever done, and that's in the district court's, that's in the bankruptcy court's opinion. So as a result of that, none of those parties have ever had their transactions challenged by the IRS to the knowledge of Comdisco, except Downey, who settled and retained 55% of their benefits. So that's why the issue has never come up. But we also think the issue has never come up, quite frankly, Your Honor, because nobody would ever have tried to torture or shoehorn this claim into 11B when you've got the list of express warranties in Section 4 of the purchase agreement, which ends with a big, bold-faced disclaimer of anything else that's not in there. And then when you get to the question about, well, then what does this mean? What is this document or certificate furnished in connection herewith or therewith? Judge Sykes' point is exactly the point. Look at the agreement. Section 2 of the agreement has a list of five specific documents that Comdisco agreed to deliver to the closing. And perhaps even more pertinent to the court, Section 4J of the purchase agreement has a warranty of Comdisco's, of the material accuracy of Comdisco's 10K. And what it says there, Your Honor, is it says Comdisco has heretofore furnished to purchaser true and complete copies of Comdisco's 10K, and we warrant them. Well, these parties knew. If there was some document that was provided to the buyer in this due diligence process, they knew if that document was going to be warranted, how you needed to put it into the express written provisions of this contract. And search the agreements, high and low, there's zero reference to the delivery of any appraisal reports, to the validity of any appraisal reports, to vouching for the accuracy of any appraisal reports. And to comment on the exchange between the bench and counsel with respect to, well, where did this Marshall and Stevens report come from? Did Comdisco furnish it? My answer is we specifically contracted not to furnish it. We helped them get it. But if you want to know who paid for it, read their sworn under oath protest to the IRS, which says we hired them and we paid them and they're independent. Now that they've developed this theory under 11B where any document, any piece of paper, any fax, anything else creates an express warranty that they can enforce against us in complete derogation of the allocation of fundamental risks where we took fair market value, sustained it, litigated it at the bankruptcy court, and proved that we did not falsely state the fair market value. We didn't take the residual value. So, you know, I'd suggest, Your Honor, the contract is clear.
Does the contract itself say anything about the contract itself doesn't specify the residual value, does it?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
Right, it doesn't.
Absolutely not. And when they spoke to fair market value, the other high point of risk, they didn't say we warrant Marshall and Stevens or we warrant any appraisal report. The parties said the purchase price will not exceed the fair market value. I mean, that's the way you would do it in a carefully crafted set of $45 million agreements between two sophisticated parties. Unless the court has further questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. McKenna. Mr. Trella, how much time does he have? 2-3 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. It is not torturing the contract language to fit these appraisal reports under 11B. The contract language is very clear. Any document furnished in connection with.
Yes, I know. But what about Mr. McKenna's point? The inaccuracy in any material respect of any representation or warranty made by Comdisco herein or in the equipment purchase agreement or any document or certificate, isn't that limited to representations or warranties made by Comdisco?
Well, I think by furnishing the document, Comdisco is making the representation or warranty, Your Honor. I think that's the purpose of that language.
Well, I don't know. That seems a little strained, doesn't it?
Well, if you look at...
What is the representation?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch...
In your view, what is the scope of this term, representation?
I believe it refers to any representation of fact in any document that Comdisco provided in connection with the transaction. If you look at 11B, it talks about representation or warranty made by lessee in the contracts or in any document or certificate furnished by lessee. I think it's drawing a distinction there.
Doesn't it say made by Comdisco?
Herein or in the equipment purchase agreement
or any document or
certificate furnished by Comdisco.
But isn't that still a representation or warranty made by Comdisco rather than by someone else?
Well, Your Honor, I think where Comdisco is providing documents, regardless of who prepared them, our view obviously is that it's a representation by Comdisco.
Well, even accepting that, what representation are you asserting was inaccurate?
There are several. If you look at the Marshall and Stevens reports, Your Honor, for example, our curves have proven to be satisfactorily accurate to permit us to make reasonable estimates of future value. The IRS in Comdisco Exhibit 7, which is their final report, said that these curves and these estimates were anything but satisfactorily accurate. In fact, they were out of date. They were based on obsolescent equipment. So there's one specific representation that simply was not accurate as of the date it was made. There are others. They talk about we keep abreast of technological advancements. The IRS found that they did not, again, because these curves and their methods were based on obsolescent computers. They didn't take account of the rate of technological change in 1990. That's almost a verbatim what the IRS said. So it's those sorts of representations in the report. It's not the residual value that Comdisco has been focusing on. It's the method by which they got there and what they said about the method by which they got
there. But weren't there other estimates that were, as you say, very close to what M&S did?
Yes, but those were basically, we looked at M&S's report and we think it was fine. Now, that would get into, you know, you might have a factual issue about whether, as a factual matter, they were really, the method was inaccurate, whether these curves were or were not appropriate. But in terms of the issue here, those other reports, I think, aren't particularly relevant to determine whether these were furnished by Comdisco or are the kinds of documents referenced under 11B. I see my time's up if the court has no...
Before you sit down, always my question would be... Mr. McKenna said that you told the IRS that you had procured this Marshall and Stevens appraisal. Is that correct?
I don't think that's correct. I think the protest to the IRS said that these were independent appraisals, by which Downey meant that they weren't values that what the IRS would call the tax shelter promoter himself concocted. The specific statement, Your Honor, to be candid, I can't remember exactly.
Downey would be classified as the tax shelter promoter?
No. Comdisco would be.
Comdisco is the tax shelter promoter.
Right.
I see.
Marshall
Stevens is independent of Comdisco.
Yes. And this is a factual issue, whether it was furnished by, which the bankruptcy court expressly declined to decide. So I think that's an issue that would have to be decided at some point as a factual matter.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel. Next case.